Hello, folks. Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show. This is Tony coming to you from New Zealand. And with me on the show, I have Leo Hyman. I've had Leo on the show a few times now. It's been a little while since the last time you're on, Leo. But man, I've enjoyed our previous discussion, so I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on, Tony.
I'm sure it will be well worth it. Like I say, the last times we've been on have been great. So, yeah, I guess the first thing I wanted to just mention, and then you can say what you might think about it. In some previous videos, I'd talked about how the World Health Organization had been meeting and there was a potential coup, really, to take over sovereignty of countries under pandemic guidelines. Well, so recently the World Health Organization spent about a week considering Joe Biden's 13 controversial amendments to the international health regulations, and official delegates from countries like Australia, the UK and the US, of course, because it was Biden to push it, spoke in strong support of those amendments. But on Wednesday, the 25th of May, which also happened to be Africa Day, a delegate from Botswana read a statement on behalf of 47 African nations, members, saying they would be collectively withholding their support for the reforms. And representatives from some other countries stated that they had reservations over the proposed changes and they'd not be supporting them either. And those countries included Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, Iran, and Malaysia. And Brazil even went as far as to say it would exit the WHO entirely if this bill went forward rather than be subject to the new amendments or subjected to them. In the end, the WHO and its supporters from the most wealthy nations were forced to back down. But a new working group was convened to make technical recommendations on the proposed amendments, which will be resubmitted along with the pandemic treaty at the 77th Health Assembly meeting in 2024. So it looks like we've possibly temporarily dodged a bullet. What are your thoughts on it?
Yes, we certainly did. And I would like to think that it has something to do with our reporting and our activism, among all of the different alternative news sites, podcasters, YouTubers. I mean, we really did a full court press on this issue for about 2 weeks leading up to the event at the end of May. However, I'm not so sure that that had anything to do with it. I think it's possible it had a little bit to do with it, but I think more likely it was those nations having second thoughts about giving up their sovereignty that you mentioned, Brazil in particular, India, Russia, the African delegation, Malaysia, Iran. You ticked them all off there. And, who would have thought, Tony, that we would owe it to the Russians and the mullahs of Iran to help at least delay this significant strengthening of the enforcement powers of the World Health Organization. And I really think that this is the plan, at least the plan that was on the table. We'll see how they make their next move. But as far as we know, the plan that was on the table was to basically bring in the one world government through the health avenue, through the avenue of people and nations' health. They talked about not so much about pandemics. You know, they want us to think that this is just about pandemics. But if you look at the language they use in these amendments, and I'm sure it will be the same way in this new pandemic treaty that they want to bring up in 2 years. It's that they don't talk so much about pandemics in the verbiage. They talk about public health emergencies. Public health emergencies. You think about the wide swath of issues that could be fit into that pigeonhole. They could bring up anything from climate change to gun violence to drug interdiction, any number of things. Almost anything could be deemed a public health crisis, and then that would bring in the United Nations World Health Organization to tell your government, your national government, how to deal with that so-called emergency, that public health emergency. And so I really feel like we did dodge a bullet. Maybe Satan's plan will be pushed back by a couple of years. I don't know, but we do need to remain vigilant and watch where this, where the next move of the globalists will be. Will they pivot away from the health issue since that didn't work and try to take another, try to come at us from another angle? You know, we have the issue of World War III that's out there, right?
Yeah.
And we know that they also work through wars. It was after World War I that they tried to set up the League of Nations, and that failed, largely due to the U.S. Senate, which back in 1921, we still had patriots in the U.S. Senate. Now, not so much. So after World War II, they tried again, and they brought that was how we ended up with the United Nations and the World Health Organization and the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund and all of these global bodies that seek to water down or eventually to destroy national sovereignty. And we know that's Satan's plan. God ordained nations, right?
Yeah.
And so naturally, Satan hates nations and has been warring against nations ever since. It started at the Tower of Babel. And, you know, where he tried to unite all the people groups together and build a tower up to the heavens. And God said, no way. He scrambled the nations and he scrambled the languages, excuse me, so they couldn't communicate with each other. And then they were scattered into various different parts of the world. And Satan has been trying ever since to erect a new Tower of Babel. He's relentless, and we know who wins in the end, but they're coming at us, make no mistake, they're coming at us from every angle.
Yes. Well, the World Health Organization, of course, apart from the US government, is funded, second biggest funder is Bill Gates Foundation,
correct.
Bill and Melinda Gates. So, you know, anything that they do is nefarious for a start. I know New Zealand and Israel both supported that horrible amendments, so I'm glad
That was another good silver lining about the whole thing, I think. We found out which nations are ready and raring to go for global government.
Yeah.
They are chomping at the bit to give up their sovereignty and create a global monstrosity.
Yes.
And we know who these nations are now. They are basically the Western NATO powers, along with New Zealand, Australia, and the EU, US, Canada.
Well, unfortunately, Helen Clark, who was a former Prime Minister of New Zealand and is high up in the United Nations, was a big one behind the pushing for this whole pandemic treaty stuff. I mean, quite frankly, our Prime Minister we have here, Jacinda Ardern, I can't stand her, but she was actually mentored and started working for Helen Clark. That's how she got her start in politics. And of course, we know that Ardern is Klaus Schwab, young School of Young Global Leaders graduate. And she was recently meeting with another School of Global Leaders graduate, which was Gavin Newsom in California, and they were talking about climate change, you know, creating this pact between California and New Zealand on something along those lines. It was very non-specific. But basically, this whole sustainability and climate change thing for the globalist, you know, controllers is another one. And you wrote an article recently about the kill phase. What was it? Let me have a look. Well, the title of the article was Globalists Have Entered the Kill Phase of Great Reset. Remember the Deagle population forecast? It now makes total sense. So what can you tell us about that?
Yes. Well, the globalists, if you look at their rhetoric, Klaus Schwab at the Davos meeting last week, week before last, he said that we have to prepare for an angrier world. That tells me that they're very much aware that their policies revolving around climate change, revolving around pushing and escalating this war in the Ukraine, the whole pandemic overreaction, forcing people to wear masks and get vaccinated with an unknown toxic substance. They know these policies are very, very unpopular. And they know that they cannot fully implement the Great Reset as long as up to 30% of the American population is so far resisting. Hmm. They're not wearing masks. They're definitely not getting the coercive vaccine. Yeah. They're not buckling under that pressure. And we've had tremendous pressure here, not just from the government, but from all of the major corporations.
Yeah.
Trying to they were all threatening to fire people if they didn't get this injection. Yes. Actually, a series of injections, right? Not yeah. just one.
Yes. Up to four now, isn't it?
Right. Right. But they backed off, the corporations did in this country, because they hit a wall. They hit a wall with about 30 to 35%, sometimes more, depending on the company. But it averaged probably around 25 to 30% of their employees refused to get this injection. Mm-hmm. And I don't know I think it was probably similar in many of the other Western countries.
Yes.
And so they probably realized all along that a certain number of people would not submit to this yeah. tyranny. And yeah. let's face it, that's what it is, yes. tyranny. And so I think the plan all along called for a kill phase, a culling of the global population to dwindle it down to a more manageable size. For one thing, they don't need all these worker bees anymore because they've got robots and they've got artificial intelligence to handle so much of their busy work now that they used to have human beings to perform. And so there's that reason, but there's also the reason that it's just too unwieldy, it's too unmanageable for the type of total control, total surveillance society that they want to bring into being. And so I really believe that they would love to eliminate 30, 35% of the global population, possibly more. And they're going to do this through a continuation of these vaccines. I expect them to make another push for the mandatory injections. And if they can't get any of the 30%, they will at least get the people who already have two or three injections to get more of them. Okay?
Yeah.
And this will do what? It will kill a certain percentage of them. It will sterilize a certain percentage of the younger people. That's why they want to get it into all the children.
Yes.
The FDA, Food and Drug Administration, is supposed to decide in the next week or so here in the United States whether or not to allow these shots to be given to infants as young as 6 months
yeah.
old.
And the crazy thing is, when you look at the documents that Pfizer's been forced to release, it just shows you that basically, there's no way this should have been pushed. There's so much duplicity and there's so much in those documents that suggests that this was rushed and that people died. Lots of people died in the trials even. So why on earth it's being just not even, that should be the forefront of the news, really, but it's not.
Exactly. And so they know the impact that these shots are having. They've been administering them now for 16 months or so.
Yeah, something like that.
So they know the effects, and so they shouldn't even be considering the fact that they're even considering allowing these shots to be given to little babies tells you that they are trying to destroy human life.
Yeah.
Trying, going out of their way to do it. And so, and that's just one of the mechanisms that I cover in this article. There's many other things, you know, from the food shortages to the hyperinflation, the stoking of World War III, the legalization of very, very powerful narcotics now. We are seeing states and countries across the world considering legalizing fentanyl. Fentanyl is 100 times more powerful than heroin.
Wow.
Canada is considering legalizing it. New York City, while not going so far as to legalize it, they're putting ads up throughout their subway system encouraging people to use fentanyl, quote, safely, how to safely use fentanyl. You cannot safely use fentanyl. Yeah. If you take a couple of grains too much, it will kill you, and they know it. And so they are, and then you talk about you look at the radical abortion policies where they're expanding, continue to expand the legal parameters of when a mother can abort her baby.
Yeah.
It is now right up to the moment of birth, and even hours after birth.
Yeah.
Some states here in the U.S. are saying you can put that baby out on the table and talk to the doctor and decide whether or not you want to kill it. So it's all about, it all is leading to one thing, Tony, death. And we see it in the numbers. The life insurance companies coming out with their mortality rates for all of 2021 and now the first quarter of 2022 show that the all-cause mortality rates among young people 18 to 39, 18 to 49, they're off the charts. They're up 20 to 40% in some, depending on the state. And so, and we see similar reports coming out of various European countries. I don't know if you've had such data in New Zealand about your mortality rates for 2021 yet.
I haven't actually seen it, but I do know I've seen some of the rates of people dying from COVID, supposedly from COVID or with COVID.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the rates of COVID deaths.
No,
I'm
but what I was going to say is I noticed that the ones that are dying the most are the more vaccine shots you've had, the more likely you are to die from COVID.
Right. And the states and the nations with the highest rates of vaccination are the very ones who have the highest rates of death over the last year.
Yeah.
So the numbers are in and they're not looking good. Mm. You throw a World War III type scenario on top of this, and there is no telling how much of a reduction in the global population we could see.
Yes, yeah, well, that's right. And you mentioned the Deagle forecast in the title of your article. Now, I don't know, a lot of people probably don't remember. I'm sure a lot of our listeners do, but some people will wonder what that was, because that forecast has been taken down. But it had reduction in population by 2025 in a huge number of countries, New Zealand, America probably the hardest hit, or one of the hardest. I think your population, according to that forecast, was down from 300 and something million to 90 million.
It was down from 332 million to 99 million.
Yeah.
Basically, we would lose two-thirds of our population if that forecast turns out to be accurate.
Yep. And New Zealand, I think, according to that, we lose about a third, something like that. But Great Britain and Germany, another two countries, you know, that were supposed to lose masses of people. Interestingly, though, countries like China don't, according to that forecast. But, it's interesting that they removed it when COVID really got, and the vaccination thing really got going
Yes, they removed it just as the vaccines were being rolled out in March 2021.
Yeah.
They removed it from their website, that forecast. And so that's why I say in my headline that now the Deagle forecast, which nobody understood when it came out in 2014, they were scratching their heads saying, you know, how in the God's green earth could we lose 2/3 of our population by 2025?
Yeah.
Now it's starting to make sense. You've got killer vaccines being forced upon people, and you've got the potential out there for World War III.
And of course, Deagle was basically a military website. So, yeah. What about another article that you've written is local globalism, how cities are being used to create digital slaves to the coming beast system. I'll just read a little bit of the article, actually. When the world goes to the next stage of wireless networks, 6G, people will no longer use cell phones, the CEO of Nokia said at the World Economic Forum meeting in Davos last month. Why? They won't need them. Everything they need for 24/7 digital connectivity will either be worn on the body or placed under the skin, Pekka Lundmark of Nokia said. He added that in the 6G era, we can expect very high quality holograms, a hologram in a physical structure that diffracts light into an image, according to the Holo Center, which adds that the term hologram can refer to both encoded material and the resulting image. When I read that, but I see the potential with holograms for all sorts of deception.
The
rest of it with the wireless technology and being incorporated into our bodies and so on, we know that that's a big goal of Klaus Schwab. I mean, the World Economic Forum transhumanist thing, Klaus Schwab's been very open in talking about it. And then you've got Harari from Israel, who's an advisor to Klaus Schwab, being very clear about where this is all going as well. So that's another interesting article that you've written.
Yes. I think you mentioned the key word there when it comes to the hologram and a lot of this stuff is deception. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad you picked up on that because that's exactly what I was hoping readers would pick up on. This is very dangerous road that we're heading down with the recent advances in technology where Harari said that we've come to a point, he said we've had two technological revolutions over recent decades. One is in computer science and the other is in bioscience or biomedical, the biomedical field. So you've got advances in the biomedical bioscience field and the advances in computers over the last 40, 50 years. But now he said the two are merging together. And so we are entering an age where the digitization of the world will become the digitization of the human being, where we will wear the computer on our person. We will ingest the computer when we take medication. Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, was speaking at Davos, and he was talking about advances in medical science where they will put a tiny little nano chip in the medication that you swallow, and that microchip will send messages, will transmit data to the insurance company, to your insurance company, to let them know if you are following doctor's orders or not by taking your medication.
Actually, that was in Davos 2018 rather than this year that he brought that out. But of course, that was before COVID and Bourla and his mob created the vaccines. So that's very interesting that it even predated that. So when people say, you're just a conspiracy theorist, when you say they're putting tracking chips and vaccines and different things, well, I mean, he straight out told you that. The FDA had approved a pill that they could do that.
Exactly. And we had Tal Zaks in 2017 at a TED Talk admitting that By 2017, they'd already figured out how to, quote, hack a person's DNA and hack into their genetic code and make changes to it. He talked about that in 2017. So this has been around, this has been discovered for at least the last 7 or 8 years. And so this whole thing, I think I've said it before about Operation Warp Speed, that was a big scam and a big deception. There was no Operation Warp Speed. We already had this thing available before COVID hit. All they had to do was, what they did was probably done in an hour or two, you know, tweak the coding of the genetics of the virus and put it into the so-called vaccine. That's all they had to do. And there's technology, I'm told, that's now available where that type of gene sequencing can be done in a matter of minutes.
Wow.
Yes, that's how fast and how capable the technology is now when it comes to genetic editing and sequencing. So they're talking about upgrading the human being with this new technology. It is straight from the pit of hell.
Yeah.
And this man, Harari, is one of the main demons who has escaped from hell, apparently. I personally think that he's demon-possessed. If you watch that video that I have embedded in this article that we're talking about right now of Harari speaking, it is frightening. He talks about how, like I said, these two technologies will be merged, the computer chip and the biotechnology. And he talks about the use of algorithms. And he said that if he had had this technology available to him, he would not have had to wait till he was 21 years old to figure out that he was gay, that he was homosexual. He said that he could have used this technology, he said, in the hands of a government or some other entity, could have informed him at age 12 that he was gay. And he wouldn't have had to have wasted 9 years of his life not knowing that he was gay. That's how evil this man is. He wants to use AI, artificial technology, to tell some little kid, 10, 11, 12 years old, at that age, that he wants to say, you know what? I'm speaking to you now. You are a homosexual. I can tell by the way your thoughts are roaming. I can tell by the way you looked at that man that you have a secret desire for that man, you little 11 or 12-year-old. Yeah. Is that not evil?
Yes. And he's also called people hackable animals.
Yes. Well, that's following that same theme of what we've been talking about. Tal Zaks, he's the Moderna CEO. Yeah. He talked about hacking the human genome in 2017.
Yeah.
Klaus Schwab talks about it. Harari talks about it. They say the next big revolution will be the next big technological revolution. The fourth industrial revolution, as Schwab calls it, will be the merging of these technologies where they will merge your physical, biological, and digital identity. It'll all be merged into one identity.
If only the average person realized that this Klaus Schwab that we're just talking about, this transhumanist head of Davos, the World Economic Forum, is the same guy that's trained most of the leaders in the world today, from Bill Gates to Jeff Bezos to Mark Zuckerberg to Gavin Newsom to all sorts, Justin Trudeau, Jacinda Ardern, Emmanuel Macron. I mean, the list, even Vladimir Putin went through his school of young global leaders under a different name. They called it something else, but it was the same basic thing. And all of these people have been mentored by Klaus Schwab. It's no wonder that the world is all heading in the same sort of direction, because they've put all of these people into positions of power. And so, of course, the other catchphrase that they're all talking about is sustainability. Everything has to be sustainability. So you've got this accord of all these leaders pushing for this. So how does the sustainability thing fit in with the whole transhumanism?
The sustainability goes back to what we were talking about earlier, with a smaller global population, more manageable, more controllable, more monitorable. And you look at, you know, the obsession, the literal obsession that these people have with the LGBTQ agenda.
Yeah.
Why is that? You know, why did they suddenly, a few years, about, let's say, 7, 8, 9 years ago, well, it started longer. It started in the 90s, really, when the TV shows and the movies started, you know, slipping in these little innuendos. It was very subtle at first, you know, that being gay is somehow not a bad thing. And we should be normalizing that. And then you had the whole gay marriage thing in 2015 in the United States. And not long after that, around 2017, they did what? They started pivoting to the transgenders.
Yeah.
Now, what do all these perverted identities have in common? They all have in common the fact that they do not reproduce. If everybody was transgendered, gay, lesbian, or queer like they want, there would be no human beings born on the planet.
Yes.
And they have, you know, straight heterosexual people to thank for their very existence. But you don't see them having heterosexual Pride Month, do you?
No. No. Of course, if they did that, there would be an outcry. It's like, you know.
Right. Exactly. But this is their idea, their vision of sustainability. Yeah. Kill off or don't even let people be born and get that population down to, you know, maybe a billion or billion people or so, maybe 2 billion at the most. And, you know, the Georgia Guidestone said 500 million was the ideal, you know, the ideal global population. I don't know. God forbid if they want to go that far with it. I don't think any of us stand a chance if that is achieved of surviving the next decade.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that certainly would not be even a world you'd probably want to even be trying to survive in if they have their way on that, really. Be an awful
Correct.
World. But they're moving us in that direction in various ways. And I just actually was just thinking about it just then, you know, everyone looks at Bill Gates and so many people think he's the author of so much evil going on. Well, I think he's just a front man for bigger people behind him. But then you've got this interesting feud between Elon Musk and Bill Gates, which I think is Hegelian dialectic in play again, because Elon Musk is a transhumanist through and through, but people are seeing him as some sort of savior, a lot of people. You know, is this of Elon Musk to the rescue? And yet,
that's about to die off as well, because I don't think that his bid to purchase Twitter is actually going to go through. I think it's going to fall flat on its face. And you won't hear much anymore about him being the First Amendment freedom of speech savior of the world.
Right. That's interesting. I just find it very interesting that these two people have sort of been going head to head somewhat, when they're both really working towards the same basic goal, just in different ways.
That's actually a great point, Tony. Yeah. Isn't that what we see in the political world, you know, as well?
Yes.
Between politicians, you got, you know, orange man bad, Biden good.
Or vice versa.
Right. And sometimes I think that they actually love Donald Trump because he makes the perfect boogeyman for them, you know. And if you have a boogeyman that you can roll out to scare people with, what happens? They take their eyes off the real threat.
Yeah. That's interesting, though. I heard somebody say just a few days ago, it'll all be better when Trump comes back. And so you've still got this section of the population that sees Trump as some sort of savior. And and that particular person happened to be an unvaccinated person, I will say. And yet, well, Donald Trump was the guy that pushed the whole vaccine thing to start with. So
he was the one who initially declared the national health emergency, which to this day has never been allowed to expire.
Yeah.
We're still living under emergency health law in this country, which means what? We are not living under the Constitution. We're living under an emergency law. They can do anything, including steal elections, as long as they have emergency law in place, because emergency law allows them to take extraordinary measures whenever they want, however they want. And that includes extraordinary measures in how you run the elections. That's what the Republicans have never been able to figure out, Tony. And I'm talking about some of the most brilliant Republicans out there, okay, that I respect in many ways. They never address that issue, that yes, the election may have been stolen. Yes, Mark Zuckerberg paid for unsupervised drop boxes where people they call them the 2000 mules in the film, right? They were allowed to drive up and stuff those ballot boxes with Democrat votes for Joe Biden. Under normal circumstances, those drop boxes would have never been allowed. They would have been struck down as unconstitutional because only state legislatures under the Constitution are allowed to set the protocols and logistics for federal elections. But because we're under emergency law, see, the governors and the secretaries of state could just willy-nilly say, yes, we're going to allow these drop boxes, and we don't care who pays for them, even if it is Zuckerberg. And so this is something they don't want to talk about, and that was initially put in place by their man, Donald Trump. Yeah. He's also the one who gave the platform, a big national platform, to Dr. Evil Fauci.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, and then he initiated Operation Warp Speed, which was to bring these killer vaccines to market as quickly as possible, which, as we know, the vaccine was pretty much already available. They just had to tweak some things and it was ready to go. But they couldn't have done that without Trump's approval. And so, yeah, it perplexes me when I see people who say, yeah, we don't want these evil vaccines, but oh, Trump is our savior.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense if you look at it from that way, because a lot of the same people that people are pushing forward as anti-vaccine doctors and so on are all pushing the whole Trump thing still. It's like, what's going on here? When, you know, you're supposedly anti-vaccine, anti-COVID vaccine anyway, not necessarily anti-other vaccines, but and yet you're pushing Donald Trump. It's like, something doesn't add up. Something smells fishy about it.
it really does. And if you look at some of Trump's endorsements lately, that smells very fishy to me as well. Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania, he is a very well-known liberal who was pro-abortion, pro-gun control, pro-transgender. All of the things that Trump supposedly is against, he's for. Trump, you know, is also endorsing, I'm told, this just came out, I think, yesterday, Kevin McCarthy, who was the former Speaker of the House and was very critical of Trump in the wake of the January 6th events. In fact, they have him on audio saying that he considered asking Trump to resign the presidency in that month of January 2020. January 2021, excuse me. however, Trump endorses him now. You know, this is just Trump. Listen, Trump was burned by rhinos and Democrats his first term in office. So what does he do? He turns around and endorses more rhinos. It makes no sense to me. If he truly was serious about getting back in there and learning from his mistakes, I don't think he would be backing some of the people that we see him backing.
Yeah, that's true. The other side of this is, you know, it's becoming more and more obvious that, I mean, Biden's popularity is dropping like crazy. And, you know,
even among Democrats.
Yeah. He's another one. It can be used as a scapegoat at some point when he's replaced whatever, then it's almost like he's been set up as a laughingstock president in some ways.
Absolutely. It's like there's puppet masters behind the curtain.
Yeah.
And we only get to see the puppets.
Yes.
And you've got this left-right Democrat-Republican dichotomy that just perfectly divides the nation and keeps people's focus off of the real enemies, which are the people at Davos. Yes. and their financial backers.
And the financial backers, yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I think even there's people, probably the most powerful people are actually behind the scenes, not the ones we're seeing. And they stay right in the shadows deliberately. And so we see Bill Gates's and those type of people being pushed to the fore. But I think there's a tier of people even bigger.
Oh, that absolutely.
Control them.
I believe, yeah, Bill Gates is nowhere near the top.
No. No. So, yeah, it's very interesting, the whole thing, concerning, interesting. It's interesting to watch it, and a lot of the things that we sort of said were going to happen years ago are happening when we were labelled as conspiracy theorists before, and yet now it's like, hello, the very things we were warning about are happening. But anyway, I covered a little bit of that in a previous video. So your articles that we've mentioned, where can people find them? They're definitely worth reading.
Yeah, leohoman.com. That's last name Homan, spelled H-O-H-M-A-N-N. So it's got two N's at the end of it, leohoman.com. And I usually post an article to sometimes two or three articles per week. So just click the little follow button on my website and you should get an email alert whenever I post a new article.
Sounds great.
And also check out my book, Stealth Invasion, which is on Amazon, and it predicted a lot of what we're seeing today, back when it came out in 2017. It talks a lot about the Islamic issue, but the subtitle is a little deceiving, because it's really more a book about globalism and how it just uses the Marxists, uses the Muslim Islamists, and uses all of these splinter groups as a sort of battering ram against the national interests of the Western formerly free nations. Yeah. But you've got the globalist insiders who are the puppet masters using all of these groups. They are just merely useful idiots, in my opinion, yeah, Tony.
And there is a link to that on your website that can go straight to that book, is there?
Yes.
Yeah, cool. Okay, well, that's been another very good discussion. I'm really pleased with what we've covered today, and my thinking here is we should do this again soon, Leo.
Yes, I agree. Very good. I always enjoy being on your podcast, Tony.
Yes, cheers. Well, thank you, and we will have to organize to do it again soon. So thank you for being on today, Leo.
Thank you, sir.
And folks, don't forget also to visit and bookmark minutetomidnight.com, where we put all of our videos and articles and so forth. And A Minute to Midnight's run 100% by donations. A big thank you to the people that help through donating. That's always greatly appreciated. And you can do that at our website. And the music used in the shows is written, played, and recorded by me. And on the music subject, if you're interested, I also have another YouTube channel with some music videos on that I've made. In fact, there's a brand new music video of a song of mine on there, which I will leave a link to my YouTube channel and website for them, just the straight music stuff as well, in the bottom here of this video. So thanks for listening, folks, and hopefully we'll be back with another show in a few days' time. God bless and stay safe.